Cônjuge.
So welcome, Mr. Cesare. You are not here as an accused. That day the college is there for the accused. But for a change today, it occupies by people who are not guilty of an offense in terms of public finance management. And also to welcome a member from Joint Budget. It is a joint critic who says that it will be prudent for us to interact with you jointly rather than for you to come to COPA and next week you're called by Joint Budget to say the same thing. So first we may as well have this hearing together. We will also want to welcome the councillors from Palace City that they meet us on Monday. They are members of the Public Accounts Committee and the Planning Team. They are here to learn from the best for purpose of setting up their own account committee. They have been asked in yesterday's committee meeting and today they want to see us in action. So hopefully they will go back inspired and informed and will do just as is expected of any public account committee. We do the usual service introductions and then hand over to National Shaker to address us. And after that, if there are any questions, we'll then ask them. But if after the presentation there is no question, the meeting will just disappear. So that's how it's going to be. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I was saying this at the beginning that I was put in a very difficult position of having to choose between two masters. Because the Portfolio Committee on Finance visit oversized visit 2 weeks ago and they asked for a follow-up. So they are thinking I'm going to have to go there. So I said to my team, the only committee that instills the fear of God in public officials is COPA. So I had to come to COPA before I could go there. And I would not like to wait. I will hand over to Junior and you will introduce the team and then you will walk us through the presentation.
Thank you, COPA. And the chairperson of the budget committee is Mabi. This year, I hope you realize that this is the first step of taking over. It's not going to be a coup. But my name is Truman Nambale, the Attorney General. On my right hand side, immediately, is not simply responsible for the government implementation. And next to him is Olive. Yeah, from Samji. On the extreme right there, the lady is Rebuji Ramala Sheha, responsible for what you call national accounts, which we call of reporting in government, not the three spheres of communities. And Jason, who works at the team north on the field of implementation issues. And the trophy is well known, I think, because they operate from this territory. Thank you very much, Chair. We will try and run the presentation quickly so that we will allow for an interaction should there be any to do. If you could
Can I check? I
to understand that something is apparently piggybacking on National Treasury through marketing representation. Yes, Chair, the part of the privilege that I'm going to talk to, there's an element that we begin to talk about around the public finance management training, and an element that we're going to share with you on what we're doing in this national on training some capability, which is a long-term kind of a strategy in dealing with capacity in government. And we thought then, given those two aspects that we're dealing with around the civilization in this report, it is then appropriate for somebody to kind of share with the committee some of those issues. You will see as we present that it is necessary that somebody comes to the step up to the floor in dealing with some of the issues that are challenging that are facing the public sector.
Yeah, no, we will not go into the trenches over that, except that the shares are bought. So in our preparation and in our mental setup, then we have to know that something is coming and there is a consequence that is coming. But no, it's fine. So you will make a presentation and then somebody should keep us thereafter, make a presentation. Because when we respond, we will respond to everything. I think that is natural.
Thank you, Chair. We will take note of that in future. We will make sure that the arrangements are appropriate in every respect. So the issues we're going to deal with will form the format that you see in the case of content. And towards the end, we will deal with the issue of actual expenditure, because the budget of expenditure is over the concept that we incorporate that level of life that we deal with those issues. But the content is going to be like that, interoperative committee, risk management issues, internal control, asset management, supply chain management, document information and other issues around the PSMA that we think or co-partners we are playing about, and then we deal with the actual expenditure. After the conclusion, we'll then hand over to William to deal with other issues related to training. By the way of introduction, this is the 8th report on the PSMA implementation. There have been some successes. I think we can mention 4 or 5 of those in the form of the annual report of departments are beginning to talk to the ELE document. There's improved budget monitoring in terms of the ELE monitoring, the Section 32 report, the Section in the local government, the Section 71 and the FSMA. So there is that improvement that we see as a result of the implementation of the PSMA. As you will know, some years back, the report of the department used to come out a year or so after the year ended. Now they do come out 2 months after year end, and the audit just finished in time, it takes place in time. All of these things enhance accountability issues, because soon enough, at least oversight structures are able to get sight of this report and then hopefully act on them. And by oversight structures, also mean the accounting officers and executive authorities. There is an ongoing monitoring of the implementation of the PSMA and the assessment of the impact thereof. We do make use of the audit general support in terms of the key capture in the audit and analyze that and work out ways in which we can respond. But there are still areas in which the PSMA is causing, in which departments and various agencies are facing challenges in implementing the PSMA. Some of these can be easily resolved, some of them are quite a bit of a challenge. Among these internal audit and audit committees, there are challenges there. We'll talk about them. Health management, there are issues that we think still need to be improved quite a lot. On internal control, there is also a lot of improvement that has been required. We'll talk about some of the issues in relation there too. The performance information, we're finalizing that as we want to implement it. And it's important that we get to that stage, because the whole issue of accountability in government is not about whether money was spent. It's about if you are in the Department of Housing and you say you spent all your money, we ought to important in ensuring that all of those issues are tied together properly. On the internal auditing in particular, we conducted a survey a few years ago, and we completed that survey last year to get a sense of how this function functions. Because what you see in most of the qualifications is that there are issues around internal control, and the internal auditing function is supposed to be a function that is providing a service and being a proactive service provider to the department in dealing with the issues of internal control. And what you pick up is that in the part of the principles that are concerned, the intelligence framework, the treasury regulations, the CDM, the department comply across the board. They do comply. But is that effective? That is the question that we now asking. And when you look at some of the issues that impact on effectiveness, and you can see the audit report, and we have the conclusion that it's not as effective as it should have been. And as we pick up some of these things, we realize that in most of the departments still find a lot of vacancies. And I need to put the context here in the sense that yes, there is a shortage of interoperating skills in the country, but there are strategies in which we can minimize that and begin to make an impact here. The position of the chief audit executive, you recall, chair the intelligence conference that we invited you to. Most of the intelligence were complaining that they are not occupying an important enough position within the structure of the department. And as such, the other members of management in the department, they just, you know, think that, look, I'm not going to be told by a junior staff what to do and so on. It poses problems. So it has to be a respectable level. But you can't take this amendment by law until that level is reached. That is the view that we have hold. But the level of the auditing function is pitched by the Barak Department and poses the responsibility in relation to his respect by the Barak officials in the department. We have had, and I think we make one other point here to point out is that depending on how the structure of interoperating is done in the department, it does then find itself facing a problem with the other department services. The case, it faces itself a problem where for access to the process it relies on the CFO, but big part of its function is to look after what the CFO does, and then that poses still a problem in relation to how the resources are then allocated to the internal auditing function. And the accounting office approach to play a very important role in that regard. So I think the role the accounting office are still playing in internal auditing is that a compliance function only. I hope this year we're doing that. We wanted to send internal audit in our, the idea here is to bring all of the internal auditors, we get the internal auditors of government speak in these conferences to tell us the successes that they have and share with other internal auditors, but also to raise the issue of concern so that we can map up a way forward in terms of what we need to do. So that has been very successful. We find a lot of positive feedback and a lot of activity that are taking place from these conferences. And as a result of these conferences. The internal audit function in government operates based on the treasury regulations that state that interauditing must comply with the interauditing standards that are prescribed by the Institute of Internal Auditing. That's the best practice that we have. And in this regard, these standards prescribe that interauditing function must check the health of internal auditing. You must plan to assure and see how well it's functioning, where the weaknesses are, and what improvements can be made. And this quality assurance review must take place every 5 years. Now, it's about roughly 5 years since the internal audit function was established in government. And the first of those quality assurance reviews are taking place. We have decided to take that function for the first time around as National Treasury to do it and fund it ourselves. Since providers have been appointed and that work is ongoing in the department. And part of the reason for doing it centrally like that is to ensure that there's uniformity and we can get valuable information that comes out of this process, and then we can establish some strategies in terms of what interventions are needed to go in here. On the risk management side, We have increased our activity in this area, but in the past years, in my first chair, we are not that active. We have procured health management food. We have implemented in 14 sites. We have tested this site, this tool in 27 exercises, and the rollout is taking place. And the tool basically is going to be our strategic intervention in the part of the management concern, because we're going to be able to pull data around the management of our entities and make the data available, eliminate duplication, and ensure that there's consistency as well in the managed reach department uses. And this tool will watch as the national trader and the Royal Strategic Department, and they want to take it basically for free. We've conducted risk management training for about 103 officials countrywide. We've established risk management fora, particularly the national one is functioning and meeting regularly. But in the province, the risk management forum is not yet in existence for the provinces, and we're rolling out that process and helping the department, the provinces to establish that, so that we can help the provincial and the national department, and then the provinces can help each other in the provinces and the local government as well. We've hosted the risk management symposium, and because of its success, we're trying to go between the various areas, because we realize that some of the local government participants sometimes will not participate because it's far, problems are not available and so on. So this will rotate into various provinces to make it easily accessible to the various provinces. The internal control issues were changed. There has been a bit of a delay in this part of the internal control framework, because we realize that department, if you look at the qualifications of the Auditor General, about 60-70% of the issues are at level 2. Which means that there is in the financial management capability model that the General is using in assessing that. There is still a level, which means that the internal controls are not being done, or in cases are not being followed. Where they exist, they are not being followed in the certain areas, they do not exist. And that is a problem that we don't want to be in, and we want to move all of the departments to a level where they can start talking about performance information and not about the basic internal control. In this regard, Mr. Treasury has established an internal control framework. We are linking this up with the financial capability model and developing a template that can be used by the accounting officer to assess themselves. And the accounting officer can say, this is the efficient net, and then I need to improve this area. And together, National Treasury, together with the accounting officer, can then develop strategies to support the finance department in a more effective and focused manner. And we're hoping that this will be finalized, the campaign will be finalized towards the end of this year, and we'll be rolling out and doing the first assessment across the country. Hopefully we'll have a report of that assessment by the end of the financial year, or soon thereafter. In joint asset management chair, as we've reported in the past, we have had a lot of activity here with assisted departments, with drone plans. These plans are being implemented, but there are still challenges. And the nature of the challenges here is twofold. Depending on the department, for instance, look at the department like defense, you find that the problem in that particular department would be related to just the volume of the assets that they're dealing with. Because it's just so many assets that are dealing with and the legal systems that they have. Even though there is a little bit of stability in that particular department in the area of asset management. But you look at other departments, they do not have even the stability in terms of the resources that they have. People get trained, and those people get promoted, and then they leave the function that they were doing, and then there's nobody looking after the asset management in those various departments. So the high staff turnover has been a problem. And the people that occupy the function of the asset manager in the various departments range from level 6 to level 12. So depending on which, on what level that person is occupying in a particular department, the department that requires an asset manager will then push to advertise. And when the person that applies is not actually pushing, advertise, and the person applies, then it moves over to the department that pays more. Because the level in that department is a little bit higher. So these are some of the challenges in relation to stability in asset management in various departments. And of course, I think the accounting officers ought to take it a little bit seriously and put resources in this regard. And obviously make sure that there is a unit that deals with this and not an individual. So those are the challenges in as far as the asset management. We are constantly engaging the various stakeholders to find some of the solutions that would be that good solution with the Torah. Some people do that, specific support, and you will see improvements in that as we go forward. On the supply chain management, the ongoing implementation of this policy is on. Non-substantial contract has been devolved completely to the accounting officer, thereby emphasizing the principle of the PFMA that government has managed and holds them accountable. This, at the moment, the process is aligning, it's about aligning this supply management policy with the broad-based black economic empowerment, and that process is ongoing between ourselves and the DGR. And the implementation of that is for the population, again, so that is in some cases, in one of the departments in terms of savings, in the expenditure by the income. Performance information, the framework has finally been finalized. The guidelines are being finalized in terms of its implementation and rollout. And in the next few months, National Treasury and the Barack Obama delegation workshop in ensuring that this gets implemented. And then it's going to be taking some consistency because of the principles that are embodied in this document. We're going to see some consistency in the manner in which departments report on performance information. And that will have to go in terms of coming in and auditing this information in a consistent manner. And then the reports that we find out of that hopefully are going to improve and enhance the accountability issue. So that's basically the issues that I can raise around the performance information. Other matter of change relates to the IFMS Integrated Financial Management System. The process has now started, there's been tenders issued, and some of them, I think there's been some hours as well in certain areas that are going to ensure that the integrated financial management systems are developed. So, in terms of the plan that was put in place, we're then beginning to see that we can then see some of the milestones being achieved in this regard. The other issue around the implementation of the general recognized accounting practice, up until now, only three standards are effective in terms of the minister's proclamation, but there's a lot more other standards that have been developed as we will see in the report. The question then becomes, why have these standards not been implemented? And this question was one asked. And then the basic reason here is that when the accounting standards give us the basis of which we report, auditors have to be able to come in and audit this information. And they will respond from an auditing point of view in a particular manner. And this was posing a challenge technically because the auditors are saying this does not constitute a reporting framework. And without being technical, a reporting framework is a recognized framework in which you use to report. Now, if you don't have a reporting framework, the opinion of the auditor is going to be a particular kind of an opinion. And that opinion would not be held with accountability. And we have been debating this issue with the auditor just last week. Thursday, we met with the auditing profession, accounting profession, and the auditors with a unified view that the accounting standards that we've developed, the graph standards that we've developed, do constitute a framework. So going forward, in the coming year, the coming 2 years, we're going to see some of the standards being implemented. The process of implementation, of course, there will be entire implementation, proper guidelines being done, workshops being run to help people, the experience of local government, etc. That we need to do that. So that is the process that is ongoing there in as far as the implementation of the draft standard. We do have an early warning report, monthly management report, we talked about this as well. And we're ready with the pilot testing of this. There has been some delays because of changes and loss of staff in our office as well. So there is the implementation plan. We're going to be collaborating with some of the departments towards the end of this financial year and hopefully roll out by the end of next year. And once we get to this point, we're hoping that this will help move the reporting to a later date in the year and then we'll be able to improve accountability and enhance that process too. There's been positive results in terms of the helping of the provincial departments in terms of the budgeting process, expenditure is improving. That's not what we want it to be, but there are signs that it's improving, and we need to be able to understand this because sometimes the March spike does confuse some of these things, and some of the systems are being that might arise there. But generally, there is some improvement in relation to provincial spending, and this is the direct result of the work that the intergovernmental has been doing. there is an issue. Work that has been done by our others in liability management session around the interaction between government and the public entities and the transfer of funds, that's the concern for the public entities, whether it's a dividend, whether it's a capital transfer to the government and so on. And the policies around this area have been developed and then and we're going to be seeing this implementation for the criminal investigation. Training matters of public practice is our attempt to respond to the challenges of capacity building in government, to train each other accountants from national treasury, so that we are able to stop saying that we can't get the skills in government. We have the ones that are being trained, because ones that are being trained in government in some way. And once they finish training, we've got a contract with them to keep them for a number of years in government, and then thereby ensuring that we keep the skills. And this project was signed off by the minister. We are in the process of recruiting now and working the curriculum, and we're going to start having the first 10 candidates or trainees joining us January next year. And this works hand in hand with the incentive program as well that is naturally there to us to assist in developing the team. And also to support those two programs, the top program and the incentive program. Departments can use those people. But in the top program in particular, we'll try anyone to identify the parameters where the candidates will be deployed so that we are able to impact positively on the government. On the expenditure, between expenditure share and the accounts of appropriated funds, basically the underpinning is about 2% overall. And as you can see, the central government is the bigger central government and the financial administration services are the bigger ones, 2.7% and 4.5% respectively. And again, there are reasons why this, if you look at the central government, for instance, you've got home affairs where there's a huge amount of underspending that took place there. But part of that underspending is because the minister said, let's go and investigate the system of internal control in the department. And therefore, the minister wasn't comfortable going ahead to spend when she's not comfortable with the internal control issues. So there are a number of areas where the minister said, hold on here, because I need to be able to understand what is happening. So things will be rolling out in the coming months as the process there has been finalized. There has been transfer to provincial and local government, and the issue here is because of the compliance with the grants that were dropped due to the understanding with in that area, and the funds that are related to the disaster relief project. So there are reasons as well why there is an understanding with the provincial and local government. If we think about the other areas where national treasury is involved, there's a lot of transfers that lead to the IFMS, There has been some delay in the IFMS, even though it's picked up now. So some of the procurement that we expected have taken place is only taking place now, and therefore we only expect in the coming years. And the transfers relating to the division of revenue. The division of revenue specifies that if you meet these conditions, then the money gets transferred. If you don't meet the conditions, the money doesn't get transferred. So the other thing there is not necessarily because of anything but the fact that those conditions are not met and now they have been met, and that's the process. And then the rest of the areas are really not that that big, except maybe to mention the public enterprises issue around the underpinning there. There's about 280 million in the transfer to the net, which is a general transfer, and then the debt portion has to remain behind. And it's one of the leads to that effect portion. That roughly shares the issues around our spending. I think it shows an improvement overall in the spending in government. And again, where there is underspending, there are some of them that are not reflecting inefficiencies necessarily, but in fact are reflecting the discipline that has to be there in public finance management. The last point that I'm being reminded to say here is that these numbers that we were giving to you here are the numbers based on preliminary numbers because the weighting has not been finalized. So there might be some slight changes in some of these numbers as a result of the things that come out of the audit. But these are the numbers that we put directly from the system. If you look at the central administration, you will see that Parliament in particular, since you have spent all of this money, this is a misnomer. As before, the members think that Parliament is spending everything. the Progressive Director of the Department. One, we do not have information around the actual claims from Parliament because the systems in Parliament now are separate, so we don't have access to that data. So we can only say this is a lot of transfer in the Department of Parliament is concerned. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Parliament has said everything. There is understanding there as well, but we don't know the extent and we wouldn't want to put a finger here without that knowing. But the other reason is that Parliament does retain its funds. It's funds as well, as opposed to other funds that have to retain, that have to retain funds. So because they retain the funds, we're not able to get information coming back to us in terms of the funds that are being carried out by Parliament. And Chair, that's the picture as far as the spending is concerned. I think what we can say by way of conclusion is that the initiatives that we have just talked to are consistent with what the Treasury has to do in terms of its support to the department. We have taken in Subsection 2, Subsection 2 of the PFMA. And we are committed to increasing our participation by ensuring that the enforcement takes place and also assisting the oversight structures in carrying out their own duties by making information available. But what must be understood is that the responsibility for spending, the responsibility for taking corrective action in most of these things is the duty of the accounting officer of the Barack Department as assigned in Section 38 of the PFMA. And in the part of the accounting authorities in our institution, as assigned in Section 51 of the PFMA. Thank you, Chair. At this point, I will hand over to you to take us through the training issue and then we'll open it up for you.
Thank you, Chairperson Skoka and Chairperson of the Joint Budget Committee and honourable members. It's indeed a pleasure for us to share this platform with our partners in National Treasury. This presentation is going to be very brief, just to give you some an overview and background of what's happening within Zambia as it is transforming into an academy of public service academy. And then I'll talk also briefly about our partnership with National Treasury with regard to finance management training. I think in terms of capacity needs within government, we all realize that the cabinet and the government in particular, there's a huge shortage of skills and capacity within the public service. And Sandy in its current form has been trying to address that need, but hasn't been fulfilling the particular issues or to the capacity that is required within. So what we've done, just to give you some background of what's out there currently and what we need to respond to, we did a sort of a what's called in research quick and dirty in terms of a scan of how much training was done with departments, money spent in 2006 and over a billion rand. But surprisingly, about 43% of staff in government departments at all levels received no training in 2006, and the international benchmark is around at least 5 days training per annum. So if you look at the landscape that we're dealing with, you're looking at about 250,000 women junior managers, which will require, in the new scheme of things, 1.25 million person training days. And if you look at just taking the 60% of that, assuming that some of the training is being dealt with at departmental level, you're looking at about 500,000 person training days. Then we go factor in the induction of new staff coming into the public service annually, another 200,000 person training days, which means that Zambia will have to up its game in terms of outputs from about 10 times. We currently do just over 100,000 PTDs person training days, and up to almost a million, that's point to 700,000, almost a million PTDs. So that's a huge increase. Hence, the Ministerial Committee and Cabinet's recommendation that Zambia be reconstituted as a public service academy with a new mandate. Now, transforming to the academy, Zambia and transform is moving with adopted three mantras. The first is around the currently provided we're going to move into facilitation, which means we would have independent trainers or up to university training a government-endorsed program. So that's facilitation mode that we will not be an actual provider at Sandy. It's not whole-scale franchising. It's that Sandy will develop a curriculum, endorse the curriculum, quality manager through a monitoring evaluation system. Moving away from competition to collaboration with other providers, working with other parties to realize there's a lot of duplication in some of our government departments around training, so we need to work with them, hence a partnership with National Treasury, but also in other areas like with universities or other providers, so we want to work collaboratively, particularly with academies, provincial academies. We don't want to be seen to be competing with provincial academies in terms of public service training, because we realize it can be. Everyone has an important role to play in this process. And then to move from selective coverage to what's called the M word by a minister of massification, upscaling to the kind of levels that the country requires in terms of capacity building. And then very quickly, we are looking at two main fields of activity. We're looking at executive development for SMS levels, about 7,000 participants. MC low and upper SMS levels, people coming into senior management service. And that we will work in collaboration with universities and transport and other service providers. Then the second stream of activities are called the massification agenda, training junior and middle managers, this is the big number you saw earlier, the training framework, the curriculum, the development of that, the quality assurance of that, the provincial academy and the Department of Provincial and Local Government, that's also what training in that particular area, monitoring and evaluation, and then the induction for new interns. So that's just a snapshot of what's happening with SAMHSA moving from its current formal structure to the academy. And again, I want to emphasize the collaborative model, and this is the basis on which we've worked with National Treasury in developing finance management training. So the next issue on capacity building for finance managers, to give you some background to that, we established a partnership with Treasury because we realized Government General, we closed some of the gaps, some of the training areas that need new analysis was done, and put together a list of programs that cover various areas. We identified priority areas for training within financial management, and those are listed on slide 4. You'll see zonal awards coming up, risk management, asset management, and so on and so forth. I think it's important to mention that training capacity building initiative is only the tip of the iceberg. I think you need to train people, you need to also provide ongoing institutional support, and this is what Treasury does very well in supporting people with models in terms of and organizational development simultaneously. So you try and link what we're doing in training with the work that Treasury does in terms of supporting departments and individual units. We then went through a new process, and they haven't operated like this in the past. We instead of a dedicated provider model, we facilitated, we appointed 5 service providers to a very rigorous process. Some of those are universities, others are providers who work in the public service arena. And then SAMHSA, together with National Treasury, we worked on the rollout strategy. National Treasury assisted SAMHSA in picking up finance and project management unit, so we've got a dedicated unit which is under my report, or headed up by executive manager with a team that's trained specifically around finance management, project management, and now also on monitoring and evaluation, developing a program in that area. In terms of the financial management training, we set up a project team, a steering committee which comprises ourselves, a National Treasury, and then also the various service providers. I think the idea is, honourable members and chairperson, that we need to also work with the providers going into the future, because for the massification model, we need to ensure that the providers understand what the needs of government are and that they comply with the policy requirements that we set up. We've had an incident of the service level agreement to see the providers we're dealing with, including University of Victoria, Genesis, and so on. The idea is really to get providers who can provide the quality at the right scale, with the right process and tools in place. And this is why we've been opting for universities with programs that have actually been endorsed by National Treasury in terms of quality and content. We then developed a training schedule with a number of courses and training dates. We were supposed to start March or April this year. We started late in July for various reasons, that being the new marketing approach that SAMHSA was adopting, and also because of the industrial action we made in the whole month of June. We've also got very good support from both SAMHSA's DG and the DG of National Treasury, who communicated with various DGs around what's happening with these programs. generally to inform, our DG informs other DGs about the program that's coming, that's been supported by National Treasury, and the DG of National Treasury and Holograph are the same thing. In addition to this program being endorsed by National Treasury, we're also providing a subsidy for the program to incentivize participation by various government departments at national and provincial level. So that additional support was also received in the current financial year from National Treasury, and we've seen the kind of response to that by the uptake by national provincial departments. Then finally, Chair, just one last slide. Besides working with National Treasury and provincial and national departments, we've also started working in local government municipalities. We're working with the Deputy President's office through a theater in Chester. Public-private partnerships. The first one we are looking at is training of chief financial officers and their finance managers in municipalities, and that will be supported by the Black, very exciting, very innovative venture that we're looking at. Various role players. It's been done under the auspices of the DPD office, the Family and National Treasury, DPRG, AG's office, and so on. I think the benefits and the strength of this approach is innovative, but also the fact of the strength and capacity of the partners that are playing in the department. So we all use our various expertise, knowledge and experience, pull it together so we can have an integrated approach and avoid duplication in terms of what we do in the public service. Program proponents, we realize that you need to have obviously focus on financial training, but also some leadership and management training. Again, you're not going to duplicate. DPRG is doing training on leadership for local government. We'll look at that program and see how we can tweak those models to talk to our particular needs. We certainly realize there's constraints, capacity constraints, and we don't want to reinvent the wheel and duplicate. So it's a process of synergizing efforts and working collectively as partners for the benefit of the public service. We established a steering committee. And then also another exciting venture that you might have heard of is the Old Visual Cinemas Trust, is working currently in the Cape Town and also Mandela Metropolitan System municipalities, helping them build and strengthen the internal order functions. We want to upscale that particular program. I'm meeting with Old Visual tomorrow and also through our various partners and the involvement of the local government in this project. We want to see if we can build the capacity of all the teams and all the functions within municipalities. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you all the members.
Thanks, Commissioner, also the Treasury for accounting. Please give some following instructions. I think it's area or initiatives that you could join the portfolio committee. For now, I pick those five.
Thanks, Chair. Because when you started working for the Department of
Justice. Is your mic on?
Yes. When you started, you said you're not, or the department is not a guilty party. So I'm begging you indulgence. I don't want to ask a question, I want to get into the status. So I need about 5 minutes, because depending on the responses, I want to ask questions. Otherwise, it becomes a normal hearing. DG, you know, I certainly listened to the DG accounting, the accounting chair, and also to something. Since 1999, the Auditor General's reports have always been qualified for things like internal control, asset management, no goods received vouchers, support documents missing, separation of duties, in other words, I can log on and work in the programming side and also in the authorizing side. So, and today, when you come to us, you say to us that the part of the problem is the lack of skill in the market. Now, I am not sure of this, Carpenter. I really am not sure whether Coker must accept that excuse from accounting officers any long after today. You can't say to me that it's because of skills that we don't have support documents. It's because of skills that somebody can't have a book that says there's one share in this office. See, that's what the asset register is about. You can't have skills as an excuse when somebody has a password or doesn't have a password and is allowed to get into the system. And we cannot say, counting officer, that it's a skills problem when the deal register doesn't tie up to the actual deal taken by the person. In other words, I can't believe, I don't believe the deal register, the Auditor General comes and says the deal roster is not. And we as government say it's because of the skills shortage. Now, don't look at the middle management there. Because we are not the public or the private sector where we want to compete for market share. Ours is to comply with regulation and law. And yet we are told, even today, that part of the problem is that we lack skills. Now, I'd like you to explain to me, what are these skills that are lacking in the financial management? What are these skills in middle management that we are lacking? I'm not asking somebody to do a cash flow register. I'm not asking somebody to do the financials. I'm asking somebody for an asset register. I want to suggest that this can't continue any longer. We are not going to accept it any longer. That is a huge shortage that is not at the register. Because from my point of view, said person, government departments, and maybe I'm simplifying it to a great extent, I need you to educate me. We focus on procurement to a large extent. Because we in the service business, not in the market. We focus on procurement, we focus on budget versus actual and wider areas of the thing. We focus on the admin side, like the lead, the HR, and so on. I'm talking just about the financial side of government. I reckon if we took somebody with a machine in 1999, by 2007, that individual should be able to do this one. That's my view. That after 7 years, somebody should be able to do that. And I'm not asking for tertiary education, I'm not asking for anything like that. So what I'm saying, accounting officer, what I'm saying to you is that I don't believe that government departments must come here and get away with the argument that there's a huge shortage in South Africa. And that is why we're getting qualified audit reports when the reasons are lack of support documents, people have access without passwords, deeper registers, asset registers, and so on. So maybe I'm missing something, but I'd like them to explain to me what, when they say there's a skill shortage, what skills are they talking about? So that we can help them find those skills. What skill shortages are we talking about in the middle management?
Yeah. Thanks, Mr.
Smith. Yeah, let me follow on from what Vincent said, because you know, this is the issue that we deal with in Skype all the time. But I don't want to repeat what Vincent said because we concur with what he said, but I just want to note that you said in your presentation, which I found very good, that no longer do you want the department or the agency to have the excuse that they have a lack of skills and capacity. Well, that's what we hear all the time. Vincent has dealt with the skills, and that ties in with capacity. However, there's another element that maybe I'd like to get your comment on. And before I ask you, I'm assuming one of my colleagues who's not here today often makes the following remark, which is really nasty, I think, but I think if you really get down to the bottom line, you know, there's a lot of truth. You think, you know, this is not a case of them lacking skills. Because a lot of people have huge amount of skills and capacity when it comes to defrauding government and looking in time and taking leave. Now, I'm just getting to the whole question of work ethic
compared to the African person, work ethic and discipline, you know, performance measurement of stuff. So I think that's really important. And then I'm just dealing with a few of our other questions to share later on with other issues, but I don't want to delve into them. But I want to just tie that in with the second presentation, which I also found very interesting. And just a few questions on Sambi. How is your steering committee constituted? That's just, you know, that's a sort of matter of information. Secondly, I just dealt with the service providers. Now, you've got this new plan, and part of your plan is going to be train people to monitor performance objectives, correct? Now, you said that you want to make a difference with this new the new way you're going to do business in Sambi. By when can we anticipate that we will feel the effect of what you're going to do now? Have you set yourself a target as to within how many years we will be able to see the effect of what you're doing? That's for now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question to Sambi. The presentation, of course, is very exciting, and I think it's most of the things, if not all of the things, that they have presented on today could be achieved. It would be very wonderful indeed for our integrated public service as a whole. From now going forward. But what I would like to know is Sambi itself as an organization, the knowledge assets that they have to ensure that everything that they have, they are contemplating or intend to put in place, there is no critical amount of information that is lost. What strategy is in place to ensure that this whole program is rolled out, because people that they will be taken through themselves will be novices, rookies, learners, and you do need a critical amount of institutional memory, just so that if they could especially further on that, to say this is exactly how we are intending to keep the organization intact in terms of knowledge assets, tested and explicit knowledge. And to National Treasury, the risk management tool that's been rolled out since August 2006, what is the cost, or what was the cost of obtaining that? The risk itself of there being no further update of the tool. I haven't seen it. I don't know how it's been structured, so to speak. So will there be no risk, if I may ask, of the system crashing because there was no risk analysis with regard to the risk, I mean the system working, say, for the next 3, 4, 5 years, with the understanding that those that are using it should be able to use it and deliver the desired results. Those are my two questions. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got two questions for the Accountant General. The one is on the table, actual expenditure for the previous financial year. And I'm particularly worried about one of our problem children is overseas. I think that you raised that, so I want to hone in on that one. It's very good that the minister stopped expenditure temporarily to put proper control mechanisms in place. But the question is, what progress are you making? I know that you're not the chief of overseas, but I'm sure you would be able to tell us, or hope you would be able to tell us, what progress are they making in that regard. We're all very worried about overseas. And the second question is related to Parliament itself, because there's no figure under the unspent amount, and you said that you can't provide it, you don't have it, because they're in a different system. Can you give us a further clarity on that one as well? Because that also raises some concern.
Thanks for that. The first one is for Sandy. On the rollout that has been taking place on July, I would like to know what is the response from the public service, because my understanding is that the department, they normally send the people that are at the lower level. And then when it is supposed to be implemented, those people are not the people that are on the strategic positions. And I don't know if it's a strategy that's developed that they must set up a unit rather than training the individuals to get started working properly. The second question goes to the accountant general. I'm not convinced about the defense that the accountant general is putting forward on the differences. Because I think the department have to have their maintaining strategy in place for to retain their workers. For instance, I don't understand if the department can do a sum of 50 something workers. Same time, is it proper? So I think that's a defense or whatever response that is given by the department to the accountant. I think for me it's not relevant. And on the side of the expense and upgrading part of it, what we have observed is that it is a lack of planning. The planning side, because there's some weakness to the current state. Because I don't understand why the department can request so much funding. And then the funding only to say it is not, they are not able to spend it. And if you find that if they can see that they are not going to spend it, they will shift it and say they are saving. And the most part of the case you find that on the side of employees. So for me, it gives me wonder how does the department expect to perform if they don't have necessary tools, more especially human resources. All the environment, the funding, are in relation to the employees. And also please to say this, because I think it is also important. Thank you very much, Professor.
Yes, thank you. I've started taking down the list of second group, and I will start with the panel who made the back here, Taylor from the same. We start Taylor with
the list. Chairperson, I think we'll let some to respond first because I've got a longer list. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I agree with the trend. I think for us, training, as I mentioned earlier, is the tip of the iceberg. There are certain issues that need to be addressed through leadership, good leadership and effective management. And I think that relates to performance management, changing the culture, the work ethic. When it comes to training can support that. But I think there's a process also that needs to happen to ensure that those things are in place within the public service. Responding to the question of Sandy, my steering committee for finance management training comprises of senior managers on standing, including myself, and the director of the finance management training unit, senior managers from National Treasury, and then the service providers. The timeline for projects and rollout of the new academy, we are being realistic checkers and among the members. We don't go for the big bang because it's about continuation and ensuring the good work that's been done in family doesn't get lost in the process. So we'll be structured and synergized and staggered rollout. We want to start with the 700,000 PCDs in year one. Obviously, we've got a process that starts in 2008 and goes into 2011. It's a long-term approach. I believe that if you invest in people, you'll see the results. There's no quick fixes in this particular area because some of these, as I said earlier, can be ascribed to lack of skills. But there's also issues around action management and leadership. So it's a long-term process. We put together a plan,
and it will be a synergistic handover, a streamlined handover, or transition from the current academy into the new academy. We also realize that there's going to be staff appointed at a much higher level in the academy, so it will be quite a professional organization, and that's going to take some time in terms of putting those specific positions with the kind of skills and expertise that's required. Organization knowledge degree, one of the major failures that is standing is the lack of research and knowledge management. We set up a university in Canada to do that specifically. Going into the academy, that will be a specific unit will be established at a much higher level, because we recognize that we need to also ensure that what we do in terms of practice, the way we've been training, the experience that we've been learning, is acquired and maintained within a repository that we can draw from those experiences. So the knowledge management part of it is certainly going to be critical going into the academy. What we will also do is to link our knowledge management units with other departmental knowledge management units. So when people participate in standard training, one of the benefits will be that they could get access to some of those knowledge management units if they need to get information, so they don't have to come and do this kind of searches for that time. So certainly, area we need to look at, we need to be reflective, we need to ensure that we do the research and have the information to do what we do much better and more efficiently. And then the July rollout, in terms of the program, there has been a slow response. We've been not too surprised. The more popular courses like finance and non-financial managers in the public service is running out the door. Some of the more specialist courses like internal audit have been a slower uptake, but we think it's the process of getting these courses into the public service arena. I might also say that we've been first that my family doesn't have the best reputation in terms of training in some of these areas, so we have to establish ourselves, the product has to go out there and establish particular, or gain particular currencies, so we're working with National Treasury on that. The programs are targeted at various levels, and when we do send out the information to the department, we say this program focuses on senior managers or line managers or junior managers, so it is specific and targeted in terms of the needs of those people. And we've seen, for instance, we've been getting requests from some line departments to send the entire SMS component to come and do, for example, the finance or non-financial manager. So there's been an uptake, but it's happening gradually and slowly, and as I say, we need to really look at marketing is a lot better, and the program, the product itself, will have to establish a currency within the public service.
Thank you for your response to your question. I think specifically on departments that tend to go on with adjectives. Because we have parties for the speech, can you classify it one? What do you do in the team?
Chair, that is the current practice within. Stanley cannot take responsibility for the actual participants of the program. That's a departmental issue. But what we've been doing in order to support departments, we also find when it comes to financial grant, there's a spike in training because they need to spend their training budget and they'll send everybody to whatever training they can do. Trying to get departments to start planning that they're standing in the process of putting together a training needs analysis model, which will offer to provincial national departments a free service to look at the workplace skills plan to ensure their training relates to the capacity and speaks to the strategic objectives. So we're working on that, recognizing that as a challenge, we're working to build the capacity and the support within the departments to assist them in that respect. But most of them really have particular challenges in planning and being more integrated in terms of their training development agendas.
Thanks, Chair. That is incidentally came to be a problem that we sometimes pick up in the training that we do on the support by diplomatic departments. That you train people and then you go and help the department prepare financial statements, you're expecting to see a familiar face. And guess what? The familiar face passes down the corridor because he wasn't the relevant person in the first place for training. I think the question and the issue raised by Honorable Smith and Honorable colleague, this is a diagnosis, not a justification for issues not progressing. I think I need to understand that. This is a diagnosis and not a justification. The direct point that and I've been raising it. Should this continue to be refused against him? My direct answer is just this, is that no. You know, there's no way in section 38 of the Japanese says that he will do this thing provided that he's got capacity. Because that's obvious. If you want to do these things, you must employ the people that are going to do the job. If you don't employ the people that are going to do the job, then you're not going to get the job done. And you still have to answer in section 38 specifically. I think this is the message that from our office we try and put across. Yes, in certain instances there are areas where there is a shortage of skills broadly. For instance, I mentioned internal quality and in higher qualification the CRA, you know, they are looking for higher qualification, and you've got about 700 or so of those in the country that are still less than 1,000. And half of them are not working in internal auditing related work. So that becomes a dynamic that is a reality that you operate in the state. And the Institute of Internal Auditors has got a good following in terms of membership, but that following as well is not translating into internal audit practitioners that are there and available to do this work, and the country needs to have it. So it is a dynamic, it is a diagnosis of what is there. Then if that is a constraint that you operate against as an accounting officer, you know you're going to advertise it, not going to get the people, because there simply isn't enough of them in the country. What then do you do? You can't then say that you cannot do it in a way because of that fact. Because there are service providers. And service providers provide a leverage in the sense that they can employ people who may not necessarily be in a way at that time, but they provide training for those people to be able to do that, and they provide adequate supervision, and so on and so on. So the service providers that are available do increase the number, even though the official number in terms of the people qualified in this particular qualification are a few. So I'm saying that outsourcing, cross-sourcing, and having an in-house internal audit activity, whatever that other activity, financial means, asset management, and so on, you need to think about these dimensions in terms of what you do as a accounting officer. You can't come to in front of the oversight structure and say, I couldn't do it because I didn't have people. The question is, okay, there are service providers providing this service. Did you then appoint those service providers in order to be able to do it? Those are some of the questions that you have to answer. Because there are studies to deal with this thing. It's not that just those around people, there are solutions. It's the size of the solution and the attitude of the high of the dealing with the solution. So I'm saying, yes, there is a shortage of skills, but that doesn't mean that especially the years can never make it moved. It doesn't get moved. People still need to answer for this. If you go into the accounting scale, I'm not making an example about chartered accountants just because you need chartered accountants necessarily to come and work in government. Only you don't necessarily need chartered accountants, you need people who are accountants who can do the work. If there is a shortage again in that particular area of the scheme, skills development strategies tell you that you can employ interns, people with the right qualification, but they perhaps don't have the experience. And these people go through training within the department. And the other service providers that provide training can provide training. So there are ways in which you can alleviate this problem. So you can get people that are less experienced to do the work. The problem is that in some instances, you speak to somebody who is talking to you, supposed to be a CFO, and does have the title of a CFO. But when it comes to the critical assignment skills, the person is not quite the person that should do that now. Kind of what I was going to say, but from what you're saying, that let them play with my letter clear. Why when you employ these people, you're questioning us. I'm saying a person with less experience than a person who's not getting the right qualification is a two different thing. So part of the questions that are uncomfortable that can be asked, not necessarily might not want to ask the department to respond in public to this, but they get the right to us and tell us the qualifications of the people. So that we can see who our employees people. That is part of the problem. And this issue was in the press in some of the local governments in particular, where they were saying that somebody was a cashier and then the person becomes a CFO. We don't know if the person was studying or not studying. We can't make assumptions about that, but it begs the question when such things happen. So if there are areas in some provinces, there are areas in some national departments where people are not necessarily in the right place. So the question, the hard question that to be asked, and the answer that will be provided. To the extent possible, we will provide support. I hope that deals with the issue. Around the issues of work ethic and so on, yes, in certain instances, we do fix that up. And one of the easiest ways to see the thing that is the issues that Smith is talking about. You've got bank reconciliation has been done, you've got somebody doing work and supervised, you've got somebody, and those are not questions around this. Finance management is not something that requires so much in terms of the number of people. What you need processes in place to help documents, to buy something, to keep the document, to file it, you don't need an accounting degree to do that. So there are processes up front that really do not require skills. And in one of the departments that I interacted with, we're dealing with revenue management. And they said to me, look, we can't get it. I said, what do you mean? Somebody sits in front, somebody comes, greets the person and say, hello there, how are you? How can I help you with? And there's a person. Hand over the application, you stamp the application, you receive the money, you prepare a seat for that money that is going to pay. You really do not need a degree to do that. So some of the processes up front point to an area where there is a violence of skill. But for the very basic process, which is a small part of the job, then you need those skills. And there is some justification in doing that. But if you've got the document, you can actually get a service provider that comes periodically to do your record, to do your financial report with. But the rest of the process can be handled by people who are qualified. I agree with that 100%. So I'm saying that questions must still be asked, and they must still be answered by department. I think, when I'm saying no longer is department supposed to use and do the excuse, I'm saying that we need to invest. We as National Treasury Directorate need to support. And we're saying with the training of that public training program, this is our contribution towards that. It's a long-term project. People have to be trained for 3 years. We'll start seeing the benefits of this in 3 years' time and so on. But immediate benefit is that people get deployed in other areas and they do the work as they are being trained. If you train somebody to be an accountant, that person will sit down and do the accounting work. So during that training process, you will have additional pair of hands and additional training to do the work. So that will help, but obviously we have to start small because this being a training program, it involves people's future. The trainees themselves, their future is at stake. So you need to make sure that it's managed properly, you need to make sure that it's successful, while at the same time ensuring that government objectives are met. So we're not going to start very big on this project. We're going to start small and run it small for a year or two so that we can see that it stabilizes and we can make sure that it's sustainable. So that process will help provide the skills, provide the extra therapies while we are training people that we can retain over a period of time in government. The question around risk management tools, is we package this process through the funds that we got from one of the donors. I manage a program, financial management program, that is funded by the EU, and out of those funds bought this tool. To buy the tool cost of about 1.4 million rand. We can get multiple licenses for the product department because we are rolling it out. I talked about the implementation that the fewer sites are now using the tool. Part of the reason is because of the technical issue when we connect the tools to transmit the information from place to the other. We have to deal with a lot of technical issues to resolve that so that we have covered. But around the issues of the support for the tool report from South Africa, from an international company that has got, that has had presence in South Africa for years. I don't have to mention the company so that I do not advertise, but we bought it from a South African company, and so it does have support, locally. It's a reputable company, we don't see any reason why there should be issues around supporting our country. And of course, hitting one site where the software is located and then being able to access in different sites makes it easier to do those upgrades, and I don't think it's going to be that expensive to do the upgrades, and we'll be able to cater for that within the infrastructure. So we plan to continue around that. What progress is being made in relation to home affairs? I would want to answer that in this way so that I do not take the responsibility of the DG of Home Affairs in providing feedback in this regard. In fact, we have identified a lot of the problems through the investigation process. We've given a report to the minister. Some of the issues that were identified were being rectified for the past year. Obviously, some of the issues, there are systemic issues within the processes that need to be dealt with. And the minister has appointed a general team. The input of the work that we did forms part of that process in terms of the general team looking into the issues that is picked up. Just recently, I received a call from one of the streams that are working on the general team. I've been meeting with the general team already. And I received a call from one of the streams that are working with the turnaround issue around revenue management. We'll set up meetings to meet in the coming weeks, and so that we can identify, we can share with them the issue that is picked up, and then they can work out the sustainable solution to the department. I think there's a good program. Some of these things do take time to see the impact. But I think that what was good in this instance is that Treasury did not have to invoke Section 61 2D, but the minister requested the Treasury to invoke that section in relation to the support to the department. So I think there is good progress in that regard, and we'll see benefit of that going forward. On the question of Parliament, The issues around Parliament are as follows. First of all, we can tell some of the figures in terms of the understanding, but we cannot verify those figures. So that's why we should put a figure. In the report we do have a figure indicated in the write up that we provided to COVID, and that figure is 104 million, 104.5 million rand. And that's relating primarily to savings on saving. Or underspending because of savings. Because, I mean, a saving, you incur the expenditure, but you incur it less than you expected. Oh. If you don't incur the expenditure at all, that is not a saving. That is what it means to know. So it isn't a saving, it is an underspending of that figure. But we can't verify that figure because we don't have access to the data in Parliament. The decision was taken in Parliament that Parliament is not accountable to a department, and therefore we don't have access to that information. We can't from where I'm sitting, I cannot question that more. I'm not saying where you are sitting you can accept it. Parliament, every spending agency in government is accountable to Parliament. Yeah. Every spending agency in government is accountable to Parliament. So to the extent that Parliament spends money, I think there ought to be a way in which Parliament is accountable to a structure that survives in Parliament. There's not one department that is accountable to Treasury, by the way. All of them are accountable to Parliament. So that's an issue that I think ought to be clarified. And I think the process at a level where the members are engaged, this process can be resolved and we can find a way of officials to operate. But yeah, I think that's all I can say in relation to this issue. Vacancies and retaining strategies. I indicated that I also lose people. I think it's inevitable that we lose some of the people, but we also have some retention strategies to keep people. One issue that must be realized is that the employment practices in government are somewhat rigid. I hope you've had engagement with the public sector ministries, whether the people that deal with this issue, to try and provide some flexibility and so on. But I think, as the day stands currently, I think they're somewhat rigid. And therefore, that could be a challenge when the economy is growing, as we've experienced in the past few years. Because opportunities increase elsewhere other than in the public sector as well. And all of the entities that operate in this economy compete for the same schemes. And that creates challenges. But yes, departments must have retention skills. I am not saying the strategic skills as vacancies as a defense, I'm saying the vacancies as a diagnosis. Okay. As an observation of effects that it exists. And not because I'm saying it is justified. There are challenges to me, but it is an issue that has to be dealt with. The last point is about the lack of planning. Yes, I think most of the understanding, or some of the understanding, is in fact due to lack of planning, and that's an issue that oversight structures must fight. It's an issue that a kind of officer, executive authority, portfolio committees and SCOPA must fight with the various institutions so that these institutions can plan a little bit better. So when people plan better, they know what is happening. In fact, you take the necessary steps to advise the various structures in terms of what is happening. And then the necessary arrangements can be put in place and assisted when necessary to hire. I think I have answered all of the questions. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Owaro. I think that leads to all animals are equal in animal farm. So those who want to refer up questions, I'll take you, like, let me be the answer part. Yeah. Let me start with Mr. Bonetti.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson stressed before one comments and asks questions. I think it is important to say that we appreciate your contribution as departments, both family and national government. Because sometimes when we come out, it is as if we do not appreciate what we are doing. But coming back to my point, I think the problem we are having in government is the people from it, particularly at middle management. Because you have all the rules, you have all the strategies, you have all the directions. But the problem is with implementation and control. Control of the controllers, where it was tools to control, where it was authority to control, where it was authority to implement, and things that seem not to be implemented. And then this can boil down to the qualification of management or the quality of management we produce as a middle management with the support of senior management, because the support could be in the form of mentorship, it could be in the form of morale. But I do not know what type of support is given to make sure that if I have to sit this room every day, this room is swept every day, and it doesn't all happen all the time in government. If it is my task to make sure that I collect receipts, as it's been mentioned before, I do not collect receipts. And in some instances, people who are doing those things are promoted, and people who are doing their job diligently are not promoted. And then this now starts causing confusion in as far as incentives and disincentives are concerned. Now, we serve in our roles as assisting and supporting departments, emphasize those things, because, I agree that there are problems with accounting, but they are tasks that are quite simple, and then it is a matter of enforcing implementation, encouraging implementation, emphasizing implementation, and punishing where implementation does not occur, if not supporting or morally or via members. And what role do you believe, or what type of assistance that somebody gives in this regard on an ongoing basis? Secondly, we have high vacancy rates in departments, quite often in skills that are not staff. The Auditor General quite often gives us a breakdown, and then we find that no, but these are not staff skills, but they have been vacant for more than 6 months. Now, the question is, that is not a problem of senior management. It's the problem of the media management making sure that the staff is there, but it looks like somewhere incentives are mixed up. And then now that needs the support of institutions like the public service, like the public service commission and so forth, and something. But that support seems not to be forthcoming. What is your analysis of this program? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Member, Honorable Hangwana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think my questions have been covered, but I want to just say one or two ways of concern in regard to the issue of skills and capacity that we always, I don't know how long, I think all the recent has mentioned that what is it that we see as our responsibility? I can understand that the capacity building programs we do have, and we try a level best to do this and that for the various departments, but do we monitor whether those people who come for training, because most of the time what we pick up is that they do go for training, sleep in the training, or go out and have a and then tomorrow they can't do the work because there was not even a single focus on the training. What do we do? Because maybe I'm too strong. I do not believe that if you have done training one time for a person, we still need to say, oh, there's a problem of capacity. We dismiss. their strategy of monitoring it, ensuring that we also know that those people do have the who have been appointed qualified for those positions. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Member. My apologies for I was thinking of, something, you know who I was thinking of. Another one, Mr. Kim.
Thank you. It's a problem with that, but maybe it will be a part of this. I think we are all qualified for accountant. The question is, we want to know what to do and then what is the way for addressing problems that we are seeing. As much as we are having that problem as well, how to get into it. Any surprise to find out in secrecy, how can we solve this problem of the accountability and the problems of non-accountability. I think most of the things have been touched, and then all of the community has talked about that one, some of the questions that I wanted to ask, as much as one of the things. When he spoke about GRPs, I mean, those are more things when you talk about GRPs, but here, what positions are taking in, who's the things about it, and all of those. I mean, those are small things which the private sector do. It's unfair when you find the books of the week have been that there were no sort of documents to respond with if the problem. I think maybe we are still about the bishop, we are trying to find out what is the problem. Maybe by saying, if some of the accountants that are using skills to try to protect themselves, maybe it is because of lack of discipline and lack of blame. You know, thanks to a lot, there are so many regulations and laws governing the transactions of books in the finance. Those are there, but the discipline is not implemented. But I think one other thing that I have realized is that let's let you enjoy workshops and training. You only want to become the master of books. Yet when you go for employment, you look for partly positions while you are still looking for the account, but you want someone who take care of the delivery and understand the finances when the bridges are undertaking their so forth. I think now is the confidence because it means when learning what should be included should which will back up the debt skill. If someone to have a certain understanding on debt calculation, and they were lost. Because this lack of discipline is because some of the people have got a fear because they haven't got anything out of the Christian system, discipline. I think that's the problem. Because you'll find, we have seen many a time where somebody has got a lot of atrocities, but you get suspended for 2 days or 2 years, 3 years, 2 days. And thereafter, the case is lost. Then I think, after having realized that my other accounting in the State Department has lost a case after being for 9 months because of the discipline, I would rather not discipline and say this guy should go with letter. I think that is where we have got a problem and we have to change the human behavior in the human resource management. I think we have to touch that. I don't know how to do that. We have to include it when you are training, when you have to get and find out somehow can be able to take a decision, can be able to take the decision at the right time, and then at the same time not using the issue of the bias. Bias doesn't deliver. When we started arguing on understanding, you know, the accounting officer, it was very surprising. When trying to respond to them, I think they were clever. When they are left with two
2 months or 1 month and then we plus and minus nation we go. Right? They spend that money. Because they are trying to run away, I mean to try to hide the thing of I'm going to be crucified by understanding. Why did I ask so much that I don't spend that money? Now it's just a few days, he spent that money on the other side. That is another problem of way too exponential, which he just realized. So how can we deal with that? How do we explain Christ himself? Because he goes down to the cross, I mean, to do that. Because to give the contract to someone who knows that he's not going to think that, and before he gives you back your way to apply for the job next door. Now, what I'd like to prove to you must be the rider on the issues of the discipline. That whoever leaves that department, because you are saying the high structure over and all of that, is because people are coming to go to clean up pasture. You know, they're really clean up pasture. They are riding away from the hot water and trying to go next door and cause the same problem. So they ride ahead and they find. You can do whatever you do with the discipline, but bring the reverence to us and you want to see the reverence that you're given to that person. Because I can understand, if I'm going to do a person next door, I mean, the way you do it that you're standing in the day, and I'm making it easier than here. Here they must be taken to task. It means somebody has triggered the reverence. Take them then you must have the file of the reverence on your department here. Say, this file will not work, but show me the reverence that you have given that country that you have gone to ABC and Jumping A. Then I think you shall be able to find where how to control this handover of the staff. Don't be my input there as far as the issue of this is concerned. Thank
you.
Yes,
thank you,
Honorable Member. Honorable Chief, Mr. Kimber. I'm very busy because I want to deal with something at a higher level. There are many questions that one can ask of detail, but I want to begin by just saying that I have read your progress report the long one, and I want to really congratulate you. I mentioned it before you said what you've been doing now is a diagnosis. And I think that's fundamentally important, and that's good news, that you're now diagnosed. But you know, I think when you're diagnosed, what you've got to bear in mind is that you've got to intervene in those areas that will give you the greatest impact. I mean, I think it's a really good management philosophy. I mean, somebody comes with a heart attack, you first put the stent in and open up the artery, and then you start with cholesterol pills and all that. I mean, that starts the wrong way around. So my question is a very simple one. In your training program, and you did say that this is going to be rolled out, and I understand large numbers of people with required training, etc. But I think that I would just like to have the assurance that when you roll it out, that you are going to diagnose those areas in government where you can intervene with the greatest immediate impact. Now, not for us to tell you what they are. I think those of us on scope have got a pretty good idea of which they are. And so that I could leave that to you. So I just wanted to make that comment and maybe you can just give me a comment. This doctor, if you have any questions or clarity, we could go on for days discussing this document, but I think it's a very good, excellent starting point, and then we will continue to interact. The other issue I just want to quickly raise is the drainage issue of Parliament. Well, since I came down here like 3.5 years ago, we've been busy with this financial management of Parliament and the provision of legislation. I think when I went to the first meeting of the finance committee with my colleagues, they were at draft number 16 or something, and that was 3 years ago. So I think that ball is right squarely in our court as MP. If we don't fix the situation, it will never, it's never be fixed. And I'm not letting you look, I'm just saying that I think we do acknowledge that. So maybe that's we have to do as MPs, we just got to do something about it. But this just cannot go on the way it is. You are aware of the fact that they don't want to come and report to us, discuss it. They've got all sorts of reasons and they're legal, differences of opinion and so on, but I don't think it's designed to be your responsibility. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Honourable Smith.
Thanks, yeah, I agree with Mr. Chen that we could talk the whole day. And my fear, I don't think we're going to make this workshop streaming. But if you do analogy, we agree and we are happy that you diagnosed the problem. We want to ask you to go and preach the gospel of God, that we are the special servant. Now that you've diagnosed the problem, we're going to deal with the problem. And we are going to throw the book at officials according to Section 81. I think we're going to do that. We have threatened to do that at Kofa for a long time. We are going to fire people because you guys are saying you've diagnosed the problem. My colleague is saying we don't see action. People get suspended and whatever. Please don't spread the gospel with issues of our gosh. I think so, because the talk show has come to an end. And I want to say in passing, I don't accept, and I'm going to convince Pope not to accept, the argument of future. I think it's a leadership, it's lack of leadership. Let's just be very clear on that. We have a lack of leadership in our financial management sector. It's not a future. And I'm saying to Treasury, so that we work together, that is the understanding you must take away from it. Managers are not managers. And we have to intervene. So for the intervene, I think Mr. Chen and everybody else are in agreement that we can't go for it. So I agree here that and I think the last thing that maybe we should raise, I think that Comrade Ron raised it. If there's only one question that I'd like you to answer, it's this one. To what extent are labor laws inhibiting the things that Comrade Mungula is talking about? Just a sense. I understand that we have labor laws and we need to live by that. But to what extent is this labor law the reason why we can't get results of non-performing or underperforming people? What is your sense of presence? Is that an inhibition in us dealing with the problem of those that don't want to work?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My follow-up question goes back to the issue of Parliament, and I think it raised a lot of interest. And I think the reason for that is it's our organisation, the MPs, it's our institution, and we must use this institution to hold government to account. And for that reason, it's extremely important that Parliament is like Caesar's wife. It must be beyond reproach. Now, unfortunately, it's not always been like that, but we are certainly trying to bring it back to that position. Now, you said, told us that there's about 104 million rand unspent, and we understand that it's not audited, but that's the figure that we're working on at the moment. Mainly due to vacancies. So I needed another bit of information from you. What is the vacancy level? Percentage or an actual figure if you have that. Also, again, I understand unaudited probably, but if you can give us an indication so that we can take it further then.
I know that the issue of Parliament is the most critical that you can't with national service. Can you or yes, you are with question, very question, but it's from the joint budget committee perspective. And we intended to have a special session, but I think this is the opportunity for us to talk about it. That we are very concerned that on monthly basis, we do not have an idea of how time is spent. When we have to look at all government departments, but this Parliament
would you like to get information from the church for the mission, what it has been, and just because of the problem. Although other members have said that this is in the body in our court, but I'm not indicating that it's also a problem to the church that you can't monitor, given it by parliament, and this creates a problem. But I just want to add to what other members have said, that the problem of skills shortage, but not skills shortage to the extent that, you know, we talk about it. I don't think that's the case, because when we check across departments, there are people who are qualified, who are going to be somewhere else, some are highly qualified, but they are not doing what, or they are not put in positions which they deserve to be put in. And then it's a question of, like, one of our students indicated that it's a question of lack of management. That you've got skills within the institution, but those skills are not replaced. And at the same time, you would then elevate people who do not have those skills or who do not have capacity to do the work that they are employed to perform. And that's a challenge that, you know, it concerns us, I think, as both communities to go by and the other thing that I wanted to refer to, although you partly responded to it earlier on when you talked about the savings, which so-called savings by department, that actually they are not savings, but unspent funds. And with department always, when you look at the E&E, almost every department prefers to level spending on the agencies as savings. And come October, it will be achieved. But I then ask myself, how is it possible that they can spend it? Knowing very well that those are not savings. Right, it's in the end in the savings. Can you respond to those things?
Some of the issues raised were more in a comment. So the issue about implementation and control and all of those things that Donald has raised, how to ensure work is done diligently, talk to the issues around work ethic. And I think in response to this and the issues around some of the problems around the availability of capacity, so the point that I addressed is not raised. I alluded to the fact that there's a leadership problem in some instances. But there's two other problems that I need to put into this issue. One problem, leadership, to the extent that the right corrective measures were not taken, to the extent that people that need to be told that, look, you're not putting up your socks and so on, I'm not told in time. And then when it comes to the current, you can't really take action against people because you haven't really been able to deal with this in time. So that is an important element. Part of it is that the department may have a competent table. And in fact, I've got in mind one or two departments that I can recall that would really diligent people who know what they're doing every day and so on. But the DG is never in the department. Last year, I reported that in that department, the annual report was signed in the airport because the DG came in on Friday, flying out on Sunday, and the CFO went to run to the airport to meet the DG in order to do this and so on. And that's not the problem, hello. The problem is that while the DGs are with the CFO, then X on behalf of the DG, because I mean in terms of the para-official CFO tends to sit in a strategic position as the controller of the press in the department. So he tends to understand a lot of the other issues that are happening in the department. So if the CFO can stretch that way, then that CFO is not going to be effective in terms of the line hands that the CFO has to do.
I did not mention around the work ethic what happened in one of the provinces, and I can gladly say that the MEC concerned took action in this regard when he heard about it. But there were other issues, there were other problems as well. We're trying to resolve yearly issues. I sent my staff to go into this process to go and resolve matters. In fact, I personally was sitting across the table with the officials of the province, helping them prepare financial statements for hearing. I was preparing financial statements together with the officials in the province. Now, I had never thought that my job is that of thinking only. I think of my job as somebody that has to get it and stay here as well. And the CFO did not come to one department. And the quality came. The CFO did not come. And when I got an answer, the CFO did not come because the CFO is a strategic person. This is a strategic issue. The issues that I've come to deal with are not there. And an important issue. Fortunately, action was taken, and that CFO is not in the department. So there are also those issues that, as we said, I can't always do appoint people who tend to tell them that yours is a strategic goal, and therefore we bring somebody who is irrelevant, because we think that the financial management skills are not as important, and then we need the strategic skills more than we need the financial management. And then through that definition, we end up with the wrong person. So those are some of the dynamics, and these dynamics speak to the correct leadership. And one member spoke about somebody that gets appointed because politically he can understand the budget from a political perspective and so on. You know, administration is administration is administration. If you need that, you need other people to help you in the department, maybe a properly titled position that's going to strategic issues and so on, and feed into the budget process. And you can do that. But for financial management and financial administration, you need somebody that's going to be appropriate and deal with this issue. There's one department that has a very nice way to deal with this thing. They have a finance manager under the CFO. But the CFO herself in that department was a qualified person. And the finance manager underneath was also a qualified person. So you have this layer that is able to do things properly. And that department was doing well in terms of financial administration. They've got other problems. But those financial problems are not in financial administration. They are elsewhere in other things in the department. So leadership, I think, plays an important role in ensuring that these things Do we monitor discipline and attendance in the courses? Should we not dismiss people that come to these courses and then they go around to ESCA to pay their bills and all of those things? I think we did it in one of the workshops that we had to give feedback to the department, to write to the department that the official left the aid for this process, so the official may not have benefited fully. And in some instances, the person is there just as a representative of the department. I think I've spoken to that. You know, the department wants to be detailed in the register that we had somebody attending, and therefore they bring to support anybody. And the ability to think that you need to upgrade your skills, you need to go back. I think somebody talked about you need to reset that day in a year. You need to get that ability to recharge, you know, and because things change. So if your people are so busy that there is absolutely no opportunity for them to go for training, when they go for training, they come in the morning, their cell phones are on, and they come out to answer their cell phones every 5 minutes, they don't benefit anything. So we do try in our workshops to say, guys, let's switch the cell phones off, let's deal with these issues, but if you go the wrong person, you still have a problem. And hence, I'm saying, when the department comes through, to give you another question that came up, how do we then hold them accountable? How do we deal with this accountability issue? I think the simplest way is that, and I'll make an example of one department that we met recently, which the general wants to qualify, more or less, most likely going to qualify, another department is in trouble. I've met with the department quite a few times in the past week. And I asked a simple question. If you part of that, I understand your department, you have this problem last day, you have this problem here before last day, and you want me to give you a break. What problem have you made? No, it's done progress. We'll come and do a presentation to you. Okay? please, let's meet tomorrow evening for the presentation, because my schedule is 4:30, so I deprive my team. And it's an opportunity to see my edit. They don't see my edit anyway, but the department comes through. The presentation focuses on what is going to be done. My question was what progress has been done or what needed to be done. Now, what is going to be done, I appreciate and I support, and to the extent possible I was behind it. But I wanted to know what has been done, because I need to make a decision whether I can relax a little bit or return. I couldn't get anything. Of the way it has gone, the matter is now been resolved, but the principle is that if there is no progress, you're not going to get anything. Why am I raising this? How does this relate to the ability to ensure that you improve accountability? When I come here with National Treasure to answer for National Treasure, my primary objective is to make sure that I get beaten as quickly as possible. So the answers that I provide, I meant to do that just that. So it is now up to me to say, but wait a minute for a minute. You know, the question that is raised in this whole qualification says that you don't have documents. And the question that is raised here on this one says that you don't supervise people. The question here says that an asset was bought and nobody can tell where that asset. Now, those questions are very specific questions that really do not need somebody to have, high skills to deal with. So if the oversight questioning and scrutiny of the report and listening to what the response is saying tends to focus on, okay, wait a minute, what you are telling us, we appreciate, but can you address yourself to this question? Sometimes people, by reframing your question, get away with it. So I think oversight can be strengthened if there is proper attention to the detail of what is that has been qualified. Yeah. I meet with the department wanting to get exemptions, and they tell me all sorts of things, and they give me the management letter. They give me the money, but I go through the management letter. Once I've gone through the management letter, you're not going to put good over my hands. You really don't have to tell me whether what the auditors are saying in this management letter is true or not. Now, that gets translated into the audit report, which is what COPA and that oversight structure see. And even those reports do specifically point to specific problems, and people need to respond to those problems and not just do a brush over of an overall picture. And I think in that way, you will begin to have people responding properly to the issue. And actually taking what they are going to do to deal with this. Our deal with one department last year, we agreed that we're going to work with the department. We've been working with the department. The department has responsibility. There's some interesting progress. I don't want to mention the department because you want to influence it. But there's been progress. But what makes that progress is when you focus specifically on what is it that has to be done and the rest of it has been done, can we look at it as well and forget about the general statements. General statements don't help when there are specific problems. I think that can help the oversight a great deal. But dismissing and all of those things tends to be the responsibility primarily of the department because of the labor law in particular. But other oversight structures, like we can ask a question, COPA can ask questions, COPA can influence that, and control committee can influence those things, and so on. But as the people that deal with the training, we will then refer back to the executive authority or to the accounting officer in this issue. And then the executive authority, the accounting officer, from where we are sitting, has to deal with this issue. Labor law, I think they came twice, and the Honorable Smith asked the question, to what extent are they inhibiting, and the Honorable Fouquet was talked about this as well. I used to make this argument when I was in the private sector. That our labor laws are based on a principle of fairness. So that
you are able to respond and take the corrective measures that are necessary. And those corrective measures could be retraining, could be counseling, could be... There's a lot of things that you have to do to have your therapy perform. But human beings sometimes are afraid to bring the bad news to people that body or the CEO are not performing. That's without a plan. So if you don't do that upfront, things get worse to a point where they are so obvious that now everybody knows about them. And get that kind of serious and more serious action has to take place. Now at that point, if you come and try to apply the liberal at that point and didn't apply it in your own when you needed to take softer corrective measures, that are required by law because of fairness. You are not going to be able to then jump all of the processes in most of the cases. And I don't want to suggest that that's what should be changed, because it's important that for good management purposes to manage the organization, you have to have people that are not performing and not push them away and say, look, the rest is doing fine and I'm going to deal with it. Because they might just cause a big problem and then you have to deal with it and you can't deal with it. So if you don't deal with it up front, then it becomes a problem. So it's not about the labor law, but then goes back to leadership. It goes back to management. Are we taking the right decisions at the right time so that we can improve performance? Or we want to use labor law as a stick to beat people when we think that the pay is going to start kicking up. We're not focusing on an employment organization is improving its performance, but we wait until there's a big problem and then say, hey, I don't want to be beaten up for this, so I better beat these people. And then the labor law says, wait a minute, there's a process before it. And then you start saying the labor law is a hindrance. But the hindrance is the fact that you are not managing productivity. I'm not talking in the terms of the labor law, but I'm just saying that there is that problem here. And it's going to be easy to then go back and say the labor laws are a problem where they're in fact not. So we shouldn't take a very simplistic approach in analyzing how these laws have been crafted, because there's a reason why they're crafted in the manner they have. But the management has to do the right things that they ought to do. I think it was a bit of an inquisitive figure. In fact, I'm not going to elaborate further. Yeah, I'm not going to elaborate further on that. The issue on wasteful expenditure. What we do from the point of view, we define what that wasteful expenditure is. First of all, the understanding. There's a very clear definition of what understanding is, but the E&E issue, I think, is an issue that would be debated within Treasury in terms of how do we respond to that issue. We understand that there is a misnomer here. There are areas where there are serious savings, there are areas where there aren't. And we need to respond to it appropriately, but understanding is understanding. If you suppose you have somebody employed and is not employed at that, you may have very good reason why that person is not employed, but it remains understanding. So that's a different issue. We provide a definition so that these issues can be identified properly and reported accordingly. Once they are reported accordingly, there are corrective measures specified in the definition of what needs to be done in the regulation. And we expect that the various entities would then do that. If they don't, then we will have such a what to raise questions. I will refrain from talking about Parliament, but yes, the monthly expenditure issue does make the issue a little bit clearer, doesn't it? In terms of accountability and the resources. Because it's relevant, please, it's not me. I don't ask questions about some of these things to the extent that Parliament would. I ask questions so that I understand what has happened, so that I can have a vote from it. I don't ask questions because I'm asking questions because they're unrelated to me. But I happen to understand what is it that is happening here. Because when I need to provide answers, I should be able to provide answers. The last point I want to make around vacancies is that sometimes the policies that departments have, again, policies that relate to talent, Actually, there are provisions that allow for alternative measures here, because I have applied for the telecom measure. I have a plural of people. You need to have a representative structure of people coming to the interview so that, you know, you can have equity and all and avoid some of these problems. So some departments, when they formulate a policy in terms of that public service regulation that requires that standard, they then have an elaborate policy that relies heavily on higher employees. And then you find that those people are just so busy, and it takes ages before you can put together a panel to have an interview. Get that in hand. Can't see that line. Sure, should get done. But you never get informed that, hey, by the way, we need to start interviewing because you can't put the panel together. And that is a problem. That is a problem that perhaps the public service regulations maybe need to be a little bit more flexible, but I think the policies internally in the department need to make sure that they apply the policies of the public service regulations and all the flexibility that it provides, and not make the process prohibitive to a brand new. Because by the time you sit down for an interview, people are gone. Some public officials commented the last time I interviewed with them in the trailer that they have never seen such a quick turnaround from the time they applied for a position to the time they sit for an interview, whether in the private sector or public sector. Because we need we didn't advertise because we recognize people. So as soon as we advertise, we're getting late in the data. Also, it's a question of management. How do you manage the process? You know the process is going to be told. The day you advertise, you should be setting the date for the interview already and getting the people for the date of the interview. So by the time the advert goes up, you actually have a date for the interview. You put pressure to HR to do the shortlist and get the shortlist and the interview quickly. So part of it is how do you manage it? How do you manage the whole process? Because these systems are meant that there be fairness, that there be equity, that there be equal opportunities for everybody. But then how do you manage around that, within that framework, in order to do what you need to do? And I think it is possible to manage. Not all of it is too bureaucratic and necessary. I think I've covered all of the questions. There are areas that I think some people, I don't know if they've got their comments to the question.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Just one comment which will capture some of the questions arise around linking training with actual facilities and performance of the institutions. I think what we're in terms of capacity building in three dimensions, the system dimension, institutional dimension, and the individual dimension. And for us, the family, we tend to concentrate on the lower two, that's individual and institutional support, with our departments like National Treasury and system stuff. It's done by policy-making departments like National Treasury and our assistant department of Public Service and Administration. But I think, honourable members, going forward, for us, the challenge is to try with the synergistic and become the target and focus of the training that we do. We have an example within Sandy where we've been doing supply chain management training in some municipalities and providing, after the training, that particular municipality providing consultancy support, which is from family side, and not a huge amount that we charge for that like consultants would normally do. And we've seen the difference in that kind of approach. So that's sort of a case study of the kind of support that you can provide. So for us going forward, it's going to be important that when we look at training projects in particular, and in the area of finance specifically, that you can see measurable impact and results once the training has taken place and the institutional support has happened. And we'll be able to report on that when you need to in terms of your principal. Thank you very much.
Yes. You want to
take the floor? Yes. Of people. One point
I think North is free to speak. Yeah. North, you are free to speak.
Thank you, Jay. I just want to pick up on the issue raised by Mr. Kuledi and what we assistant. You know, we many times agree with each couple of meetings that we are facing that people
probably here. Once you're a member here, what we're supposed to do in terms of training, we pick up people issues. And the people issues we are talking about here is people not doing what they are supposed to do. And I think right from implementation of the Public Finance Management Act, just the theme of the PFMA was included to deal with these people issues. I think we haven't created a separate process if it is the ground for our financial level that we haven't created separate processes to deal with those issues. The Act is very clear. You need to do that in terms of the normal disciplinary proceedings issued by the Public Service and Administration Department. Those procedures were developed and dealt with in terms of labor legislation. Here, I don't know whether you've seen, there was recently a report from Public Service Commission on Financial Records Act. I can't remember all the numbers, but I think over the period of PFMA implementation, I think it's something between 3,000 and 4,000 cases of financial misconduct that are from the hearings. And in some cases, those things did end up in the middle of people. So, I mean, the point I want to stress here, yes, Stephen is quite right to say there's many, many things you need to do in the UDS on performance. But if you get to that stage where you do need to take this seriously, I think that for me is part of the importance of PFMA. And it's also the responsibility of the county officers to act in terms of this chapter of the PFMA. And if the individual results at the end of the day is to dismiss people, I think that would take out the right signal to that if people don't prefer. Thank you, Jane.
Yeah, thank you very much. If there's any for our conversation website, we'll take it. Let's break quickly for a press meeting so we can make. Because I see there's other members who want to make for our questions. So let's break for the press meeting we can make. After 10 minutes.
So that we don't talk problems with risk management, internal control, health care problem without, you know, a guidance in terms of, you know, the specific locations, because we have how many departments, more than 25, more than 28 departments, and talk about problem of risk management. In a way, that does not seem to guide us in terms of the training of the department. So we think it might be useful that we speak in much, much more focused terms. You are not bringing the department, just as the auditor general is not giving us a report. That's true. That is a tool that will assist us in sharpening our effectiveness. The second issue is around the role of Mr. Treasurer in terms of monitoring the implementation of the PFMA, and I think as you indicated, in the assessment of the joint description of Singapore. 60 years of chief administration, children of Monica, and assert chief administration of the act, and do anything that is necessary to fulfill his responsibility to make it. Now you recall that sometimes some members of the place is present about the national situation being rather in relation to the implementation and monitoring of the CSM. And one strength would be that the current arrangement is you develop platforms and they establish departments to take advantage of those platforms for training, for capacitation, and all that. I'm not sure if that is the best that we can do in terms of how relations are arranged so that we're able to fulfill Section 6B of the PFLA. And secondly, there is a form of teaching. To what extent and in what way social equity is not yet. And this forum neutralized in pursuit of the responsibilities that National Treasury has in relation to the PFLA. As you note, my inclination is towards a situation where, well, Parliament has responsibility in terms of oversight, but the law does give some responsibility to national treasury in terms of ensuring simply that they comply. Now, an arrangement that requires you to oversee it, but without clear mechanisms in terms of not necessarily enforcement, that might be too strong, but ensuring that there is a system that the people move in the right direction. It leaves you in a position where whatever you have are due to very strong recommendations, and then department will go this way or that way, and then it will be up to Parliament. I'm looking at a few issues. Going through the report, there is an observation that the accounting officers, not all of them, are then going to committee meetings. Now, to what extent does that have an impact on the quality of the work that is produced by the department? What is it that the national they can do, or when it was given the diagnosis, up to the Parliament to act? The form of system dumping, the diagnosis from the social treasurer, is it also that who's providing the diagnosis, you'll see what you do in Parliament. The question of training, as Malcolm is from Kumara indicated, how does it happen from your side before come this department that you would invite CFO, and then a class interest management attempt, and that person is allowed to sit through the training, and it is an observation, and from your side you provide the training. Okay, I think somebody also mentioned that what stops you from taking measures that ensure that the officials appreciate that the policy is not for the department to be represented, but to help. But I'm just saying, I don't think that I think there is something you could do, that there is something you should do. Otherwise, that training process is literally a waste of money, because the training is not happening. So, ultimately, it does not advance. While we say we have trained too many officials, like in some aspects of the report, too many officials were trained on this and that, but how many of those officials are relevant? So if you find that the steps are there, you've trained so many people, but to what extent does it qualitatively enhance the capacity of the institution, or if one is able to put measures that
I believe that to a large extent that was really we didn't really address the issues. After all, if there are no policies, there are some political traffic police. If there's no capacity, somebody is not organized training. So all these things, they come down to one thing, people issues. The issues in terms of compliance, that is, your junior staff complying with the policies and procedures, and your management in terms of monitoring and supervision, that it is inherent in any organization that the lower the hierarchy, the lesser the sense of responsibility. Therefore, placing an added burden on management to supervise, monitor, and ensure compliance, I think for me that those are the things that that are there. I see that in the slides that you presented on performance information, bullet point number 2 as well as number 4, they talk about performance indicators, which excellence is really. I wanted to raise the same question as Honorable Trent, that most of the departments that give grants to projects, there are challenges of monitoring. Not because there's a lack of framework, there is a framework, but at the level of implementation, it is a challenge. So when we have this statement as it is, I think it does need to take into account that there is a challenge at that level, and to recall that we have to look at that in terms of whether or not it's going to lie. And when you talk about risk management, I think there's a line that talks about the level of integration in the three fields of government that contributes to the challenge around risk management. And I think the question around DORA also might be impacted by that challenge. And for me, it is a challenge that beyond diagnosis needs a reform, a solution. Now, I'm not sure whether the coordination of Sweden should offer or it's up to us as parliamentarians to give what the challenges are. Let me
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Responding to Honourable Member Sheffield's question around what's the responsibility of the family in relation to other role players, we're certainly not taking over the seat and we're not in that business. It's problematic as it is and challenging, so we're not in that business. I think you may recall I mentioned earlier that we want to work collaboratively, and I think where we've been finding particular challenges is where when we work around projects that cut across departments or institutions. And I mentioned the project, the CFO's training municipalities as a pilot for getting new stakeholders together. I think it's the intention of Sandy currently and the Academy to really work with partners like the LDC. So we want to ensure what we do relates to the kind of work that they are advancing in terms of quality management and their responsibilities, as with the Department of Provincial and Local Government, because they are also responsible for capacity building within the local government sector. And as we move towards a single public service, it's important that we as sort of training arm of government and the family talk to these and work collaboratively with these different institutions, so at the least the left hand is knowing what the right hand is doing. I think that's a smarter way of working. That would be leading government. I think we've got enough framework to do stuff. It's about time that we start doing those things, and I think that's where the action comes in. At the project level, this is where we're looking at and putting those partners together. And I agree, I think with Honourable Gordy around linking programs to specific issues, I think you can't do training in aspect of the research will tell you that training is not a contextual, it has to speak to a specific context. And this is where Sandy or Gitman comes in and supports some of the institutional work that's done by departments like National Treasury and others like DPRG. So again, the case of us saying, let's be more focused. Let's look at where the training, the capacity building can actually support the needs and the challenges of a specific area within a specific department so that we can really measure the impact more realistically at the end of the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The issues of the general trend. When was the general thought about the increase in qualifications last year? Before he left? He did mention that part of the issue is that with the implementation of the PFMA, we've had to do things a lot more different than we've always done in the past. So I think we need to start there by saying that the qualifications are not necessarily, except to the extent that you're talking about internal control issues and so on as alluded earlier. But they're not in all respects necessarily an indication that things are necessarily getting worse. There are areas of brilliance and areas where departments came from disclaimer to qualification to no qualification. There are areas where the trend is moving in the opposite direction. So even as far as the incidents are concerned, there is a mixed bag, but the mixed bag is also influenced by the fact that on an ongoing basis we increase, we have to buy in terms of the requirements of reporting. A specific example in terms of expectations for this coming year, for the year that is being finalized now, is that you might actually see some increase in the qualifications, particularly around the asset management. Not necessarily because there is management of asset management, but because we insisted this year that there be an additional requirement that we've scoped out for the past 3 years because of the difficulties that departments are facing. So we then insisted that we need to get to a point where we move this issue up, as you said, we're not going to scope it out this year, and therefore let's see how it goes out, and then deal with the issues that come out of that. So that being the fact of implementation, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be caught. They didn't prepare themselves for it, even though we're scoping it out with the condition that we're going to bring it back soon. And some people will not do anything to get ready for that situation, and therefore they might be caught out. So the increase in qualifications in that regard relating to that particular aspect might not necessarily point to a problem. It points to a problem of the character to some extent work ethic. But not necessarily that things are deteriorating. But once people get to now for it, then they get to improve the situation. So the incident that we expect of increased requirements and so on. Leadership, partly because of how COBA has focused its attention on the accounting officer and raised questions and the interaction that we've had with COBA, partly because the auditor general's interaction with ourselves and focus the reporting on some of the issues to a point where departments have to go out and ask for help. We've had situations where, and certainly at this time of the year, when the qualifications are imminent, the DG of a department that I've never spoken to or tried to make a meeting will call and say, listen, would you need to meet? Suddenly, I'm the one who's more unavailable than the DG because there's other DGs looking for my time. So from that point of view, what then happens in these meetings, I'm always very frank with the colleagues that look, with the challenges that we face in the office, we are here to help.
were here to provide assistance, and if you use the assistance, you will be in a better situation. If you don't, you will be in a different situation. So that's part of the gospel. not quite the kind of gospel that the Honorable Smith is asking, which is also part of what you say in a way, in dealing with the department, but there is this section in the paper that requires that certain action be taken, and that action will be taken at the appropriate time. But that also helps to bring about a change in the attitude of the leadership. And I've seen quite a few departments taking some of these issues seriously. And therefore, the minute that happens, the minute the DG is worried about asset management, because that impacts the service delivery. The minute DG is worried about internal control, because that impacts the service delivery, I think that is the beginning of the right direction. It's easy to see the impact of that. But I'm beginning to see more and more DGs moving in that direction. So we don't have evidence in terms of an improved situation to say this is going to yield the results, this is yielding the results, but actually the attitude is beginning to change. So I'm hoping that it is. The issue of local government is another good part and come up. Let me start by saying that come up is a midway between graft and the standards that we used in the past. They were refreshed because of the issues of the past and with the manner in which the structure, but they are not an optimal situation. Now, the manner in which the phasing in of the standard is structured in the part of local government is like what come up in between. But that will be disruptive. To take the municipalities that is using info standards, take them to come up and then take them to craft. Most of the things to do. To the extent that there are common standards that you will use in for the system of which you would implement, the most sensible thing to do is to move from the info standard straight to the graph standard. That's the first point to make. In terms of the MFMA, the municipalities had to report for the first time, the head municipalities for the first time in June last year, in compliance with section 132 of the MFMA. And there were some challenges that we picked up there. Both in terms of the skills, availability there, and capacity, certain consensus. And I must tell you what the implications of some of these prescriptions were. So, we're implementing going ahead for the issue gazette number 30013, end of June this year, to provide a revised framework for the implementation of CRAP. So, I'll talk more information of CRAP rather than interest of come up, because I've indicated that if you go down the route of come up and then CRAP, you're actually going to create more problems from a change management point of view and create more hardship. If you think that institutions are keen on skills, are keen on capacity, and then you put them in a situation where they need sophisticated skills and sophisticated capacity, you then actually putting them in a difficult situation. So that framework is deferring issues generally more or less about 2 years. And you run workshops in high capacity municipalities. We had meetings with them last week discussing the implications of this. We've got a meeting tomorrow with SALCA and other PKC and other institutions that are related, that are linking up with the local government to discuss some of those implications and other issues relating to financial management and government in local government. So that I think are the issues that I can share with you in that regard. I think it's a very fair comment to say that the person that comes to training that is not supposed to be trained, and I'm going to be dealing with the point that the Honorable Chair raised as well. That person is basically wasting that government department's money. But often you don't know at the point the person is sitting in front of you. Of course, you'll get the attendance register and it will indicate. But you don't have the plan of the department. So that's one practical problem. You don't have the plans of the department whether they're bringing this person because they've got a plan to move this person to this position and all those things. So those are some of the dynamics that you're going to have to face in dealing with this issue. The best you can do is to communicate back to the department, which we should start. There's a team analyzing the attendance register of the past and also trying to follow up so that you can see to what extent is this a problem. And also,
and trying to see when we go back to the department, interact with the department to see the people that we train, are they the same people that are doing the job, so that we can get a better picture of this, and then we can act appropriately with the department. Yes, I think what you are getting now to chair is that there needs to be stronger action taken of some sort. What that action will be, I think, will come out of the analysis that we're doing. As you've made this observation, we then realize that we needed to analyze the information so that we can take the appropriate action. Unfortunately, at this stage, I cannot support and take this action, except for local government, when we look later back to the accounting board, to the municipalities, and said, your people came to the training and came to the workshop. By the last day, people have left and disappeared in the morning. And the other municipalities, in some instances, took action. I remember one municipality called me to testify whether the evidence is not yet on this matter. The difficulty was that I don't know whether the person left at 8 in the morning on the day or he left at 1 or 5 to 1 before I closed the court reporter. From the lawyer, we took a register of everybody that was in there and reported back. So, technicality, the person then came out quite free in that regard. But we are beginning to do something in relation to this issue. We could explain it. That's the thinking that we have, that once we've done the analysis, we should actually start writing back to the department on that basis. In fact, what made us analyze this is because one of the staff members said, but this way should have finished. So we're doing the analysis so that we can start writing letters that are appropriate and the department know what the reporting requirements are and what they need to do. And that is reported in terms of our reporting requirements. Another group of members of Kunu, your question is a bit tricky, because I think there needs to be a way of interaction between the departments and the Barat and the Barat. First of all, the portfolio committees, of course, what they call oversight things. And I think they should utilize that process and not only to check what the department is doing and raise questions, but also to raise concerns and to raise some of these issues that you're talking about in that context so that they can be assimilated into the process of the department. The other process is that go through the Mincom Fund as well can be utilized so that there is a channel in terms of the governance structure that has been created that is utilized to bring this information into the attention of the department so that it can be attended to. Yes, it gets difficult. It gets difficult, and I was reporting to the budget council a few weeks ago that some of the supply chain problems, because that's where sometimes things come, some of the supply chain problems come because somebody who's got a bit of a muscle, either political or authority of some sort, comes to but this thing needs to be done in this particular manner, and some of the national realize them as a problem here. And people act because somebody with authority has been indicated for whether political or otherwise. And then it creates problems. And then people tend to shy away later on to say, look, I'm going to be in trouble because somebody came in and there was no progress. I think there needs to be proper government structure that is utilized for that interaction so that whatever is taken from there can be brought into the process of the department and the planning of the department in a proper manner. Some of the government structures that exist, I think, can cater for that. I'm referring to Mincom Fund and so on. I don't know how the information will feed into the ministers that fit the process that goes into the quota that they come and the guarantees and so on. Some of those things can go through some such processes that are already there in government. And then something that fall out of that, then there needs to be a way in which they get fed into the department. Either through the executive authority or the funding, so into the politician interaction. And then when it goes to the department, it goes down to the department through the response of the executive authority. And I think that is beautiful. I'm hoping that I address the issue adequately in relation to that. Dora and conditional grants and honorary provision. You know, if you work in the prison, and particularly around the area that they to Dora, you can never be safe. You will always be a sinner. Department says, listen, we need to deal with this priority, government priority, and want to deal with this government priority through a conditional grant.
okay, but the difficult conditions and the engagement takes place, and then conditions get put. And this is the process between treasury and the department, not a unilateral process. In fact, in some instances, the treasury will close down some of the provisions that are being put there to make sure that they are manageable. So the issue of the conditions and plans, the issue that is a joint process between the treasury and the nine departments that want to finance the particular program or activity through a conditional grant. So that is one part. Should we give money to people that do not have the capacity to spend? That is a very difficult question to answer. The simple answer is that maybe no, because I mean people can't spend it, so why give the money? But the problem is that we also have responsibility to support and provide capacity and all those things. The point that was raised around the training, I mean there's a number of grants that are given for training as well, particularly local government and so on. And some of those grants were used properly, some of them were not used properly, and I think there's been a report already in the intergovernmental fiscal review that deals with some of those issues. So you find that certain areas we actually spend, if there's an amount allocated for training, there are areas that we spend. I would not have the details, unfortunately, in relation to that. There's a point that Member Trent raised around asset management and supply chain. Yes, in the process of supply chain, you do buy an asset, and that asset has to get into the department to get managed. So there is a very close link between the two, but there is also very specific distinction. In the life of the asset, supply chain management comes in from the time people are thinking about getting the asset to the time they procure the asset and get the asset onto the premises. And then supply chain disappears until the asset has been disposed of in the end. In between that process, then asset management kicks in as a specific activity that is to ensure the asset is in a good condition, the asset is in a good location where it's supposed to be, well maintained, and so on and so on and so on, and secured and all those things. So, yes, there has to be some link between the two, but at the same time, for government purposes, you need to have some segregation of duties so that controls improve the environment. But yes, the two are intertwined and linked. And in fact, as we develop the system, that link is going to actually be recognized in that process. Honourable Chair, we have tried to deal with the issues in the past, I think about 4 years ago or so, to get the department to feed information to the Treasury so that we could then pull together a more detailed report that could come to this committee in relation to the implementation of the TFMA. But at the time, there wasn't sufficient capacity in the Office of the Attorney General to deal with that particular issue. And we're talking some 4 years ago. We have, as you talked about in the presentation about the capability maturity model, we are contemplating or having a system that can give us an ability to analyze what is happening in the department so that we can provide intervention strategies. We should know what the Attorney General is going to say before the Attorney General tells us. That's the idea of us coming up with internal control framework and linking it to the capability maturity model. Is to make sure that we're able to understand those issues up front and can respond to them adequately at that time, and we can provide input to the committee in relation to that. So once the capability model is finalized, we can deal with that. We can be more specific around some of the issues. Because we see our role, particularly those of the Treasury, as that of an entity that can be paid to the government. So in fulfilling that role, we have to make sure that all the structures that require information in order to exercise their function do get that information in a manner that is meaningful and in fact they get that information in time so that they can make the interventions necessary to make an improvement. So we will definitely welcome an engagement in that regard, and we're working towards ensuring that we have a report that we can make available. The internal audit review, the risk management review that we've done, are a beginning of a process that goes towards that direction. But we want a total solution in this regard, which is why we've adopted the
capability from my early morning, and to use that morning to then be able to form and perform a meaningful report that can provide you with that structure. In fact, even the family set to deal with this issue. The role of trade in monitoring the implementation of the PFM, there's a number of things that we can do. We obviously make sure that the reports that are attendable and all of these frameworks and all that you have spoken to. But most importantly, when the wheels come up, what do we do? And I use the analogy of the neighbor, those that I talked about earlier, that not for every effect, for every incident that you're going to go to the maximum available corrective action that you need to take. For some of the incidences, you're going to take the smaller steps that you need to do, that is interact with the department, raise the issues, and give the department the opportunity to rectify the issues. That is to recognize. Next step is formalize that contact and communication with the department through writing a letter to the accountable system saying, you've got this problem, you've got to deal with it. If that falls on just here, you elevate it up to the minister. Minister, write to the other minister, get the other minister to deal with this issue and so on. So those are some of the steps that we put in place, and we do communicate with the department. And some of the issues arise out of that. But also the next section from there that allows us to actually go out and investigate, section E, that allows us to go out and investigate issues in the department, to then get to the bottom of what is happening, the financial management issues, section of activity. So there is a province that we put the terms of reference. We're going to be beginning very, very soon to start the investigation in relation to that particular department in that province and other agencies in that particular province. And we're going to be dealing with this issue of non-compliance to get to the place of what the steps are, and then report it appropriately. And where necessary, do direct that appropriate action be taken by the relevant maybe too late, I will accept that I'm not going to defend it and say, look, it's not too little too late, but I'm saying we have worked with the department, provided the framework, provided guidance on the framework, taken all of these necessary steps to get to a point where we can say, if this doesn't work, then we need to move into the other level, and the investigation and all of those things are part of the exercise that we're going to have to do as the treasury. Sometimes these investigations are asked for by the department, as it happened in the case of Home Affairs. Sometimes these investigations are being instituted by the treasury itself, and in the case of the province that I have not mentioned the name of, that is starting an investigation in one of the departments there. And there's many of those coming, depending on the circumstances that are coming up. So I'm saying there is a beginning of a process that says, let's take the compliance enforcement issue to another level. We'll then create a level that will appropriate for the time. Now we need to exhaust some of the rules that are available to the and not as further out some of the actions that have been taken by various departments in relation to that. But in as far as the role of the social is concerned, that's what is happening. The digital forum. There's many issues that we deal with in that forum, but the issues of relating to financial management up until now have not had the prominence that has been issued. They do get dealt with, but not to the extent that I believe there should be. And to this end, we've had interactions with the presidency around that particular issue, because across the PCC, the Presidential Coordination Committee, that deals with some of the issues that relate to financial management, and then states, linking it to service delivery, and states, you can't have that process going on its own without having a very, very focused and deliberate engagement in the digital forum that deals with financial management issues in the department.
But sometimes political management, people look at it as a something bad thing. That is an irritation that they have to deal with because it's there. But we don't think so. We think financial management is critical in order for the department to provide the delivery that is needed. And we need to push that forward. We have had forums that we've utilized in the provinces in particular to talk with the heads of departments around internal auditing, around risk management, around financial management. And we've engaged with a few of the provinces in that regard. The other provinces have promised to extend an invitation. Such an invitation has not come forth. And you will appreciate, hey, I can call in a meeting in a province and say people should come. But I might have fly down there and come back without even seeing any general department. So we try and work through the digital office in the provinces to get an audience at that level. In the past budget of Kusa meeting, we've also indicated to the MEC for finance that if that can be facilitated, that provides a platform to which these engagements can take place and we can make improvement in this regard. I'm not going to deal with the rest of the issues, Chair, that you raised. I think they are genuine issues that need to be dealt with. We just need to get our shoulders on the wheel and deal with the issues that I'm talking about. I mean, engage the digital forum so that it can begin to make an impact at that level. If there's one single thing that you have to do in order to change the kind of management or financial management government, I think it's to change the attitude of the government. If there's one single thing that you can do, because the ministers are changing at that level, the same as it happens in our department. And sometimes you tell the minister, please, you know, the DG and ourselves are busy dealing with this issue, but he just is impatient and he says, guys, I want to know what is happening. So you need that kind of commitment at that level. DG at the minister level. If you get that kind of commitment at that level, I'm telling you, you will have a head in financial management and government. And increase the
Thanks everybody who attended this meeting. We hope it was a special pleasure to be able to respond to what is ready. We hope that you will interact with you so that both committees can get the specific that you need. And we hope that civil future action. You will have to listen to us and provide what we need. Currently, so that we can do our oversight function much better than we do now. So thanks, Honorable members, for this meeting. We've got lunch in the new week. Councillor from Mukhari City. Yeah. Thanks very much. You know, the councillor from Mukhari City during tea time, they indicated that they are coming to Parliament and assisted them a lot because they are going to establish a public account. The committee in their municipality, and they wanted to learn, you know, firsthand what do we do in our business so that they can take it back. And that is, you know, encouraging for us. We therefore want to thank you very much for the visit here. We hope that you will have members in the action should not end here. Because they are even indicated that if they are councillor was responsible for financing, interaction from the joint budget committee so that we can, you know, I have some issues of intergovernmental relations between us and general minister and issue department. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
trying to get down. You will look at this and I said, sir, so how does it all seem to work? I want to go against you. Oh, no, 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 oh, sorry, I thought you were asking whether you're going up or down.
Thank you for asking. Listen, sometimes it's quite a simple thing. In terms of the magical view and the heartful view, everything can be done within the tongue. Everyone does the job in the heartful view. In the life of the magical sense, in that tongue, or in the heart, that's what I can
do to come up to see. Because, I mean, that's a serious problem. It just happens all the time. You find a guy for 3 years suspended. And they can't appoint another CFO. This guy is not in business. He's not serious, so you have the right to make it to the CFO and make it to the CFO. That's a problem. I don't know, but I suppose that's more political than financial. But we'll talk about politics later. Because you have a direct impact on what you do.
Which is just to unify again. And I think you're looking at it in one sum. Because of the point, you're not looking at justice, you're not looking at value of life. But they're always fine, not the problem.
I agree. But that is why I always personally, literally, I have an occasion for scope to suspend the current law, which doesn't make sense. We need rather to have a, and maybe it's good that the budget department, the budget committee is here, but we need to have more integrated as opposed to siloed method of working. I do something at home, and I look at the finance. We do something, and you look at service delivery. Now I'm asking the question, how do you evaluate service delivery in terms of building a house? You don't ask how much that house costs. You need a person. So that's the real fight that we have. How do you make sure that these things, at least work at an integrated level, not anything else? But it's a political fight that we'll continue for a long time. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. ad hoc way between any one of one of them in my program.
work this for the whole week. And we were conscious, we were working something in the morning till 6 a.m. And he says, I'm so sorry, that's not supported. It's not only happened, she went to get collected, I give it to the police and the entrance, and normally they bring it up and take it to the side of the police.
Do you have the actual
the other. What's the matter?
I'm going to